fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Winter's over and the snow is gone. Go get your gloves and pull your work boots on. Gotta clear that patch, pick them stones. You know the sun is gonna warm those lazy bones. Winter's over and the work's just starting. Time to get busy in the family garden. Turning the soil and planting the seeds. Laying down mulch and pulling up weeds. Mowing the corn, row on row. Then you stand right back and you watch it grow. No, even little children gotta do their part in helping it grow.
Time to get busy in the family garden. Welcome to Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, it is our annual spring gardening show. And as we do every May before the Memorial Day weekend, we check in with our resident expert, the always informative and entertaining David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company in Stevens Point. All of us listen to Larry Mueller's Garden Talk on Friday mornings, but this is a garden show with a difference. It is aimed just for those of us who live in North Central Wisconsin, where we have to cope with trying to grow vegetables, perennials, annuals, trees, and bushes in an inclement northern climate where the frost-free season is short. And we have to deal with extremes of temperatures, cycles of heavy precipitation, and most recently, weeks and months of drought. If you're already planting your garden, or if you're planning to do it this weekend, if you've got plants in the ground, this is your show. If you're wondering about pruning trees, protecting them from northern Wisconsin insects and diseases, or how to grow blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, and grapes, or if you want to know what the hot new varieties of seeds and plants are, whether they're tomatoes, zucchinis, roses, or marigolds, this is your show with advice just for us in North Central Wisconsin. So please, give us a call at 261-6371. That's 261-6371. Toll free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. You can get in right now because our lines are open. David Ryle, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
David, let's get to the, what you would call the spot news. We have a weather forecast that calls for spotty frost in the North Woods this evening. And Memorial Day is coming a week early this year.
Is it
safe for us to plant this weekend?
Well, sticking your neck out on this is really sticking your neck out on this and saying absolutely sure, go right ahead. It's a 50-50 whether or not you're safe or you're not. I think a little bit of insurance is never a bad thing. And it doesn't have to be expensive insurance. Old bed sheets over the tops of plants work very well. Lengths of plastic over the tops of plants, lightweight plastic, 6 mil, 3 mil plastic, will work. Anything that will give the plants just a couple of degrees protection can make the difference.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've heard of some high-tech devices, things like walls of water that some people use.
They work incredibly well.
And those are, describe them for us.
Well, quite literally, it is, imagine a wall of plastic tubes all stuck together in a circle configuration.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of these tubes is filled with water. The water absorbs the energy from the sun's rays during the day and then releases that energy during the evening into the surrounding air. In the middle of this wall in the ground is your little plant. So your plant is, in essence, being grown in a hothouse environment right outside in your garden.
So you can convert, say, we have these climate zones. You could convert a 2 or a 3 maybe to a 4 or 5.
Absolutely. They really do work. Make no mistake about it. It's not a gimmick. For people that live in areas where you have a very short season, where the opportunity to plant early is usually denied you because of how cold your region is, things like wall of water can really, really bring your season on as much as 2 or 3 weeks.
David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company today on Route 51 with gardening advice just for those of us who live in northern and north central Wisconsin. We're already getting phone calls, David, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742 if you want to join the conversation. Let's go to Cheryl in Catawba with, it says on my computer you've got a question about planting an apple tree.
Hi. I planted the apple tree last year, a Wolf River apple tree,
mm-hmm.
and it has blossoms on it this year. Should I be picking those off?
No.
No?
Is it a dwarf, ma'am, or a semi-dwarf?
I think it's semi-dwarf.
Normally, they come to full production by the time they're about 5 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
But when we say full production, we literally do mean where you're going to achieve a full harvest, a full bushel harvest from them. The norm for a semi-dwarf, and certainly for Wolf River, that produces a very large apple to begin with.
Uh-huh.
The norm is at maturity for the plant to produce somewhere in the region of about 3 bushels of apples.
Okay.
So around about from year 5 to 6, that's what you can expect. But it's perfectly normal for the tree to produce a few viable flowers early in its life.
Okay. Will the weight of the fruit, though, break the branches?
That's the question.
Yeah.
If the branches are very, very spindly, very thin, this is obviously a young tree, uh-huh. you might want to minimize it to maybe only 2 or 3 fruit.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Cheryl, thanks so much for the phone call. 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. We're taking gardening and landscaping advice just for those of us who live in northern Wisconsin. David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company. David, one of the things that happens to us, many of us, this time of the year, is we go out and start inspecting the fruit trees, and we find that some of them have been girdled or partially girdled by rabbits over the winter. How bad does it have to be before you just give up on a tree and pull it out of the ground?
To all intents and purposes, if the tree has been girdled more than 70% of its circumference, the tree has a very limited possibility to survive. There are ways to actually bridge the girdling, a method called inarching. It's a little complicated over the phone to explain. It would be easy to show somebody how to do it, but in essence, you basically use a young, viable branchlet from an existing tree, and you create a bridge that transfers nutrients from the lower part of the trunk to the upper part of the trunk, bridging that section that's been girdled. It takes a little bit of practice to do it, and it has to be done when the sap is definitely flowing. But it is possible to do it.
Do professional horticulturists deal with that? Is that something that if you were to call up experts, could... Yeah.
If you would have somebody come in to do it, you really want to make certain that the person has done it before, that they know the process, they know the technique. It's not a particularly complicated technique, and there's no reason why the average gardener shouldn't be able to perform it competently. But they do need somebody that has done it before to explain to them very thoroughly the details of the process.
David, how has business been this spring? We're in the middle of such a terrible economic downturn around the country. Has it affected the gardening business and businesses like Jung Seeds?
It certainly has, wonderfully.
You're kidding.
Our seed sales are at an all-time high this year. It's the same with plants, hard good sales across the board. The thing is, whenever you hit a recession, and I've gone through 2 recessions since I came to America, one on the East Coast. I don't think it impacted the Midwest quite so much. The same thing happened there. When people feel financially that they're under pressure, they tend to cut back. They tend to spend less money on big-ticket items, and they put that money into their home, into staying at home, increasing the vegetables they can grow, increasing the fruit that they can grow. These are all things they begin to turn their minds to, and I think that's exactly what we've seen this year.
Well, I guess you could say that as the high-tech economy crashes, people are turning to more traditional, more stable pastimes.
Right. And that's exactly what we're seeing.
David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We are taking phone calls from those of you who are gardeners or who are planning on doing some landscaping, wondering what to do with your trees this year. We do have a number of diseases and insect problems. Any question you've got, and again, this is a program for those of us who live up north in north central Wisconsin. We're not dealing with the entire state like Larry does every Friday morning. 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Our lines are open right now. We'll be back with your phone calls right after this.
Gonna make this garden grow. Gonna mulch you deep and low. Gonna make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row. Please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rain comes tumbling down.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company. Those phone numbers again, 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742, with gardening and horticulture advice just for those of us who live in North Central Wisconsin. David, we've got a phone call. Let's go to the phones right now. We've got Jim in Rib Mountain. Jim, you're on Route 51. Hello, Jim.
Hi Glenn, and your guest. Thanks.
David.
Great show. Appreciate your time. I have a question about can you still prune deadwood off of red or bur oak in an urban setting at this time of the year if you don't get down to the good wood? I have some large dead limbs on some oaks.
There's really no reason why you can't. If you were removing the entire tree, that would be another issue, particularly because of the concerns that we have with oak blight at the present time.
Sure. Yeah.
But as far as branch removal is concerned, if the branch is already dead, feel free to remove it. I would suggest that you basically cut it not flush with the trunk, but leave a small nub of about 2 inches.
Great. And paint that over?
And paint that over, exactly, with an appropriate sealant.
Sure. Thanks. That's wonderful news. I didn't get them all pruned this winter, and you get mature oaks, and you have large dead limbs usually.
Oh, sure.
I also have some green ash and possibly a white ash in my small urban woodlot, and I'm wondering, should I consider a preemptive harvest on a tree like that, or there may be 15-year-old trees about 6-inch diameter?
Well, the thing is, as far as there's no timber there to speak about, it's 6 inches in diameter, to all intents and purposes, so they're not really marketable per se that I would expect. I couldn't see much money coming for them.
Firewood, perhaps.
But firewood, certainly. And because of, as we all know, with green borer starting to be a real issue within the state,
Is it just a matter of time until that insect reaches Marathon County?
I really feel that it is. It's very hard indeed to stop an insect population from growing. I think at certain points we'll get a stabilization occur as far as where the insect is breeding, where it is growing, where it is living, but we're some years away from that.
I do have a friend who's a DNR forester up in the Iron Mountain, Florence, Wisconsin, northeastern Wisconsin area. He did mention that there was some consideration about harvesting merchantable ash throughout the state before it becomes infected.
Before it becomes infected, and I think that will probably occur. I think it'll have to. It'll be a waste of a resource.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise,
those trees would have to be harvested and then burned?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what would have to be done.
Wow. Invasive species, what an issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's another show that was already on
the
radio today.
Jim, thanks so much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Glenn.
Horticulture and landscaping and gardening advice just for those of us who live up north, and we need it. 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742, our resident expert, David Ryle. David, Jim was mentioning the emerald ash borer, which, right, of course, is a big concern. We've also had reports of oak wilt in part of the state.
We have.
And what's the situation with that, and what precautions can you take if you have oak trees, if any?
Well, to be quite frank, for a more up-to-date opinion on it, you'd probably have to go to one of the state forestry services. But as far as controlling it is concerned, it's very, very difficult indeed. If you have a tree that is obviously infected, you really need to isolate that tree, both at the root level and above ground level. And that's a fairly expensive proposition. You really need a very large ditch witcher to literally sever all roots below ground so that the sap that's infected doesn't actually graft to other roots belonging to other trees and infect them. So it's not a cheap process to control one of these trees.
And, boy, those oak trees are so beautiful. It's hard
they
to...
They are.
It is really worrisome to think that they might be threatened by something.
I know it seems it, but you have to see it in the larger scope of things. In reality, throughout time, species have come and gone. They have thrived, they've grown, and then they've been decimated, and another species comes along to take its place. It's part of the evolutionary cycle. So, and while it's upsetting to see, admittedly, it's really part of some plan that Mother Nature has that mm-hmm. we don't necessarily understand.
Of course, if you're worried about this growing season, it's hard to take that long-term view.
It truly is, yeah.
One of the problems that we have really had, and it's a chronic problem, I think we're going into our seventh year of drought conditions in north central Wisconsin. How does that affect trees? How does it affect gardening?
Well, if you've driven through any of the highways coming out of winter this year, I'm sure you've noticed the amount of needle burn that you're seeing in conifers, spruces, pines. It's much heavier, it's much more extensive than it's been for a number of years. One of the problems with conifers, owing to their metabolism, you don't tend to see the problem, or at least the results of a problem, until many months after it occurred. With conifers, they have a very shallow root system. If you go into a drought period and you're in sandy soil, like many of us are, if you live in Portage County, you know all about sandy soils. These plants dry out very rapidly. They don't show signs of distress like a deciduous plant would, but they're nonetheless under distress. And quite often you see the results of that many, many months later, as I say, when we're coming out of winter, and we're seeing very extensive burn. We're presuming that's been caused by wind or cold, but not necessarily.
Now, in some areas, water supply is a problem. How can we minimize the cost of water and still be able to efficiently water our plants?
The most effective method of watering, hands down, is ooze watering, or drip hoses, if you prefer.
How do you do that?
Well, ooze hoses literally are, they have microscopic pores. You hook them up to a standard pressure in a home, like a 40 PSI pressure, water pressure, and they literally push the water out through these pores, but the hose is lying on the ground. So you can literally place the water right where you need it. Instead of wasting it through evaporation or just indiscriminate watering where you're using a hose and water's everywhere, you're putting the water only where that water needs to be. There's two advantages, really good ones. One, the savings in electricity at your pump. You're not pumping anywhere near as much water.
Right.
So there is a financial saving there in your wallet. The second one is, and just as important in my opinion, you're keeping your plants dry. The drier you keep your plants during the active growing period, the less chance, because bear in mind with heat, the plants are already under some degree of stress. Keeping them dry really minimizes the opportunity for an awful lot of the pathogens, the fungal problems that we can see in certain plants, from really getting a hold and causing problems. Tomatoes in particular are very susceptible, and to some extent so are peppers.
Now, David, one of the myths, I don't know if it is a myth, is that if it's a hot summer day and clear skies and you've got the sun shining down on your tomatoes or tomatoes, as you refer to them, that you shouldn't hose them off. Is that true? The myth is that they'll actually burn and the leaves will shrivel up. Does anything like that actually happen?
You could stand there from 9 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock in the afternoon, watering gaily in the middle of an 85-degree day with the sun blistering down upon your forehead, and nothing is going to happen to those plants.
But you will be wasting a lot of water. Any advice on good irrigation methods if your garden is big enough for them?
Well, as I've already mentioned, drip and ooze hoses.
Okay.
They're excellent. They really are. They are definitely, for the future, the way people will go more and more. I believe these drought situations will become more extensive. And people will look. They'll still want a garden. They're still going to deal with the challenge of the environment. And these hoses are very, very efficient and well worth the investment.
Is organic gardening something that's continuing to pick up in terms of its popularity?
Well, I think it's true to say that it has truly come of age. More than a decade ago, it was still regarded as somewhat of a fad. The basic province of quacks and one thing or another, and not anymore. People are looking for organic pesticides, organic herbicides, organic fungicides.
The whole organic trend just got a big boost recently when the First Lady, Michelle Obama, planted an organic garden right on the grounds of the White House.
Yeah, it certainly hasn't hurt them.
If you go to Jung Seeds and you're looking for tips on organic pesticides or herbicides, can you help people out there?
Oh, sure. We have now a full line within the stores that are exclusively for that purpose, that are literally derived either from tree oils or derived from plants. A good one is Bonides 8, which is a general insecticide, and it's literally derived from a plant that, if you're a perennial grower, I bet you even know it. It's called Tanacetum officinalis. Its common name is Painted Ladies.
Okay.
And the root of that produces a very, very healthy amount of pyrethrum. Pyrethrum is a very useful insecticide for controlling, in particular, soft-bodied insects like aphids.
Very good. David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We've got to take a break for news, but this is our spring gardening show. And again, this is a show just for us, just for those of us who live in northern Wisconsin, north central Wisconsin. We've got tips for gardeners, tips for horticulturists. What kind of seeds do you want to grow? Give us a call, 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back after this news.
Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the University of Wisconsin Comprehensive Cancer Center and its affiliate partners across the state and in northern Illinois. On the web at cancer.wisc.edu.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Yes, you like potato, and I like potato. You like tomato, I like tomato. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato. Let's call the whole thing off. Oh, yes. You like potato,
and you like potato.
You like tomato,
and you like tomato.
Potato,
potato,
tomato,
tomato.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Well, most of us say tomatoes, but our guest, David Ryle. David, you say tomatoes, and we'll listen to it no matter how you pronounce it, because you've got the right advice for us in north central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, and our guest today is David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company. And our phone lines are open again, and this is your opportunity to get advice on your gardening or horticulture or tree trimming questions with a guy who can give you advice just for our northern climate. 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. David, I promised myself that we weren't going to talk about tomatoes all day today, let's bring up the subject just for a little bit. Any varieties particularly popular this year?
I think you're addicted, aren't you?
I am.
You are, I can tell. Heirloom varieties are very big. Very, very big indeed. We've got some really, really unique ones. There's a wonderful one. Its name is Eberta Peach. And it gets that name because it literally does look like the very famous Georgian peach called Eberta. It has the same striped orange and reds and yellows in the skin with a little tinge of green in there. Wonderful-looking tomato, a kind of tomato that you'd use actually for fresh eating in a salad. Wonderful look to it, visually very impressive. Then we have Black Caspian. Black Caspian is really more of a beefsteak tomato type, and it literally is almost black-red in color. Very, very thick-fleshed. A very surprising taste to it, too. A very pronounced tomato flavor.
Is that a Russian variety? A lot of the black tomatoes come from that area of the world.
They do, yeah. We have also one called Caspian Pink. Well-known at this point, even though it's an heirloom, people are very, very fond of that one. It has a truly pink-colored flesh to it.
Now, we were talking earlier about the interest that organic gardening has and the fact that people are buying more seeds and plants despite the fact that we're in a recession. The same idea that you get outside and you do something traditional, something your parents or your grandparents used to do, has that also heightened the interest in heirloom seeds?
I think there has always been this feeling about harking back to the times of your grandparents, your great-grandparents. I'm sure as a childhood stories about, you know, what they grew in the garden. And people always want to know what that was really like. And so I think that's part of the interest that's occurred, particularly with heirloom varietals. They really want that continuity, that tie to the past.
261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. If you're thinking of planting a garden this weekend, David Ryle is the guy who can give you advice for our inclement northern climates. What are the hot new flower seeds and bulb varieties this year, David?
A lot of new dahlias. A lot of new dahlias. People have loved the dinner plate types for years. We've had the decorative dinner plate types. You know, they get up to about 9 to 10 inches across. Wide range of colors. That's really enhanced. The cactus types haven't been quite as popular, but that seems to be changing. We have a one called Caribbean Fantasy, which is a combination of cherry red, almost a metallic orange, and cream wrapped in each petal. It really is a wonderful-looking plant. There's a wonderful ball dahlia called Blackberry Ripple, literally almost spherical in shape, and it looks for all the world like somebody painted a flower with blackberry and blueberry paint.
Hmm. Do you buy these flowers as plants? Is it too late, or is our season too short for us to just cast seeds into the ground?
With certain things, I would say yes. There are certain things at this point you're kind of late. Begonias are started as tubers, for instance, beautiful flowers. But if you're going to grow them from tubers, you really need to start those in March. So we're behind the eight ball on that one. However, non-stop begonias, beautiful flowers, wonderful in shade positions in the garden, grow great in hanging basket as well, by the way, or a container. They're readily available. They're grown as from seed. Nice flowers, generally about 2.5 to 3 inches across, and a very wide range of colors.
Let's talk about some other vegetable varieties. Anything new in zucchinis or summer squash?
There's a one called Butterstick in summer squash. Straight neck type, very, very smooth, very consistent, finishes out at around about 4.5 inches, 5 inches across.
Mm. You know, David, I ordered some of those seeds from you, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. I've got them in the ground right now. I'll tell you how they work out at the end of the year.
Okay.
How about zucchini?
Zucchini, we really don't have anything except for a novelty. There is a novelty here which is kind of unique. Now, most people think of a zucchini as, well, a long cylindrical vegetable, hopefully finishing out around about 6 to 8 inches in length, maybe more if you don't cut them as often. But there is a one called eight ball, and it's called eight ball because it's spherical. It literally forms a normal-looking zucchini skin and normal-looking zucchini flesh, except this one's the size of a billiard ball.
Wow.
Kind of different. And by the way, on the subject of zucchini, in my country, in Scotland, northern England, we're not so interested in picking zucchini when they're small. We actually like to harvest them when they're more than, 12 to 18 inches in length. And at that point, we call them mara. We split them in two, we scrape out the seeds, and then we saute ground beef with tomato, onion, garlic, a little bit of thyme, a little bit of marjoram and salt, and then that's put into the center of that scooped out hollow now of the vegetable. The whole thing is wrapped in aluminum foil, and it's baked.
Well, that's great advice for those of us who end up with
really big ones.
You turn around for a couple of hours, and you look at your zucchini, and it seems like you've got a few baseball bats growing.
I was gonna say, that's about the size of it, yeah.
How about beans, snap peas? What are people buying this year?
There are real shortages on those.
Really?
Across the board, everything. Well, because of the huge demand. The demand nationally for vegetable seed is really unprecedented. It probably hasn't been quite this severe since around about World War II. The demand is just enormous. And beans in particular have really been hit across the board, both fresh eating as well as beans that you would store, dry beans. We're having the same issues with peas. Across the board, you name it, whether it be a sugar snap, whether it be a snow pea, whether it be a fresh eating pea, canning pea, you name it, they're all going very, very quickly, very, very rapidly.
Still some in stock?
We have some, but it's very little.
David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company. And David, as you were saying, going back to World War II, during bad economic times, people spend more time in the family garden.
They do. They do. They know that it's a way to really save some dollars. If you think how much money you spend on vegetables a month, just vegetables, let's leave fruit out of it. Vegetables alone include potatoes, your onions, maybe the garlic that you buy, you know, as well as everything else. Add that up, multiply that by 12. You'd be amazed how many dollars you're spending on vegetables.
261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is our Spring Garden Show. And again, this is a show just for us in north central Wisconsin. If you live in this challenging northern climate and you've got questions about what to grow in your garden or how to protect those plants from frost, David Ryle is the guy to talk to you. We want to hear from you. 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back after this.
I was out in my garden pulling up some weeds when I got to the place where I had planted those seeds. It was the biggest thing that I've ever seen. It's like a giant football, but the color was green. W-A-T-E-R. Hammy yellow went, what's that spell?
Water Lily.
W-A-T-E-R.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Our guest today, David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company. It's our Spring Garden Show, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Let's go back to the phones. We have Dennis. You're on Route 51.
Hello. Welcome to you and your guest.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I grew lemon cucumbers in the southern part of the state, in Waukesha, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't find them up here. I can't find seeds, or I doubt if I'll ever find a set up here. But the lemon cucumber is just outstanding.
You can find it.
Really? Gotta look harder?
Oh, yes, you can. You pop on in here to the store.
And this is in Stevens Point?
It's in Stevens Point, right across the road from Fleet Farm. I have it waiting for you.
Do you have them set or seeds?
As plants. Not as seed, but as plants.
Oh, my goodness. They are just outstanding. And you don't hear a whole lot about them.
You don't. It's kind of a novelty thing. I saw them a number of years ago, actually, in trials. And people found them, you know, interesting to look at, but... You know, there is this perception of what a cucumber is supposed to look like, and if it doesn't look like that, well, you know, it's dubious. But,
yeah.
Yes, actually, I got to taste one, and they are very good.
Oh, they put them in a salad, and they're outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, thank you.
You're
Dennis,
welcome.
Dennis, thanks so much for the phone call. Take the Highway 10 exit off of...
I know
of,
where it is, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good enough.
I'm familiar with it.
All right, thanks so much, Dennis. 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Let's go back to the phones. We have Rothschild. You're on Route 51. Hello, Rothschild.
Hi, I have a question about...
And what is your name, ma'am? Ma'am, what's your name?
Jane.
Jane, okay.
Yes. I planted some calla lilies in pots just a few days ago, and I'm worried that it might be too late for them to come up. Should they come up and still bloom this year?
They will, ma'am.
They will.
There's a couple of things with callas you need to keep in mind. One, once you put them into the end of the pot and you give them a good watering, do not, for any reason, water them again until you see the plants really growing well.
Oh.
They're prone to one problem and one alone. It's a pathogen called Erwinia. Erwinia is in just about every water resource you'll come in contact with. Harmless to you, harmless to most plants. But funnily enough, with calla lilies, they're a little susceptible to it. So you need to keep the soil a little on the dry side until the plants are growing well. Once they're growing well, you can water them as you would water any other plant. And make sure you feed them on a regular basis, too.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome, ma'am.
Thanks so much, Jane. And 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. We've got about 7 or 8 minutes. We've got a couple of phone lines open if you want to talk to David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company. Nancy in Eagle River is a woman after my own heart. She wants tips on growing tomatoes and peppers. Nancy, you're on Route 51.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello. I am going to try to save the deer away from my garden by planting tomatoes and peppers in containers on my deck.
Mm-hmm.
And just wondering about size and soil conditions and that. I've not planted them in containers before and wonder how to start.
Let's start with the soil first and the container. Let's do the two of those together. You want to have a container round about 12 inches. A 12-inch container is about as much as you need for a tomato plant.
Right.
The soil in that container can be, and really should be, a media that's going to be able to withstand constant watering on a regular basis. It's not going to become compacted in a short space of time. So if you're going to use garden soil, which you can do, that would be fine, but you might want to amend that garden soil with a little bit of regular potting compost to help open up the structure.
Okay.
Same for the peppers.
David, just a 12-inch diameter pot is enough for even a big tomato plant?
Or
the bigger ones, do you need maybe go a little bit larger than that?
No, actually, I know that you might think, ooh, no, that seems kind of small. But more often than not, people actually waste space and growing media utilizing too much.
So 12-inch diameter and 12-inch deep?
Exactly.
Or?
Think about this. If it's a 12-inch diameter pot, you're going to be round about 11 inches deep.
Okay.
Most vegetables grow their root systems within the top 6 to 8 inches of soil structure.
All right.
Now, would you have to supplement that with fertilizer throughout the summer?
Yes, you're going to need to feed them regularly. You're going to have to think about, you know, these plants can't extract their nutrients from the surrounding soil for obvious reasons. It's in a container. So you're going to have to feed them as if you were feeding any other potted plant.
Would you use foliage feeding or...
Initially, you can start with a standard 10-10. That would do fine. Once the plant starts to produce trusses, once you start seeing flowers, you need to switch over to a fertilizer that has proportionately more potassium. That's the last number that you'll see in the NPK ratio, and a lot less nitrogen. And the reason is this. Potassium has a direct effect on plants' abilities to produce flowers and set fruit. With tomatoes, you want lots of flowers, so you're going to get good, big-size, healthy trusses.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want a lot of foliage, because think about it. You're not going to eat the leaves, are you?
All right.
And that's what the nitrogen does. The nitrogen is going to produce the leaves.
It's
going to produce the dry matter.
And Nancy, from my experience growing them on my deck, it also extends the growing season, because you're up near the house, it's a little more protected.
Sure.
If worse comes to worse,
you can
bring them in if you've got a spouse who's willing to put up with the mess in your kitchen.
Right. And will I need to stake these up at all as they grow?
Depending on which varieties you pick, there are actually varieties of tomatoes that have been bred specifically for patio. literally to be grown on a patio. If you're going to grow one in a container like that, though, I would tend to recommend that you stay with determinate varieties. Determinate varieties are varietals that literally stop growing at round about the 3.5 foot, 4 foot mark. They genetically just stop growing at that height. Indeterminate varieties, and that's mostly the heirloom, although there are one or two modern varieties that are also indeterminate by nature, they keep on growing and growing and growing. Right. They'll keep on getting taller and taller and taller unless you stop them. In their case, you really are going to need some strong, rigid form of support.
All right.
And, David, correct me if I'm wrong, the determinate varieties, they seem to produce a crop all at once, correct?
They do. Yeah, they're designed to be harvested almost all at once.
I see.
The indeterminate constantly, the ones at the bottom are ripening before the trusses at the top have even finished fully forming. So you have an extended period of harvest. The downside to that can be, and this is especially important when you live in the north, depending on when you plant these plants, depending on the variety, it can be that frosts will hit these plants before the top trusses ever get a chance to finish,
mm-hmm.
or it gets too cold for them to ripen. As long as you don't mind bringing them indoors and putting them in trays and letting them ripen inside the house, that's no big deal.
Yeah.
All right, Nancy, thanks so much for the phone call.
Thank you very much.
Our guest today is David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company. Let's go to Darlene in Wausau. Darlene, you're on Route 51.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have an apple tree that my husband sprayed last year, and it was, he doesn't know exactly what he sprayed. He thought he was spraying it with something to keep the bugs off the apples, but it was obviously the wrong type of spray, and the apples stopped growing. Now, this year, I would say about one-third of the tree is in blossom. And it's about a 15-year-old tree. Is it worth pruning back the branches that did not blossom? Is that what we should do?
Well, not now.
Okay.
No. No, it's not. Don't prune it now.
Okay.
In October, once the foliage is off the tree, by all means, prune it back. If you notice a heavy amount of water sprouts being produced, water sprouts look like very smooth, generally much lighter colored branchlets that form. They're usually very straight with very, very few spurs on them.
Okay.
You might want to prune those off especially because they sap a lot of energy away from the plant.
Okay.
As far as whatever your husband applied last fall or last season, whenever he applied this,
mm-hmm.
That won't have impacted, I couldn't imagine, unless it was oil, lime, and sulfur. But if that was the case, most of your tree would have been killed or at least severely defoliated.
Mm-hmm.
When he sprayed this, did the foliage all turn brown and crinkly
yes.
and drop off?
Yes.
I got a feeling he hit it with oil, lime, and sulfur.
Uh-huh.
Oil, lime, and sulfur is typically used in the late fall and at the end of winter to spray the tree to catch any larvae of any insects that may be trying to nest into little cracks and fissures in the bark.
Mm-hmm.
It's very effective at what it does. The problem is, of course, when you have sulfur in anything and you apply it to living tissue, sulfur combines with water to produce sulfurous acid.
Uh-huh.
And literally will burn the leaves right off your tree, which is why we always say that's a dormant oil application. You only use those kind of mixes when the tree has no foliage on it whatsoever.
I see. Okay. But now that he has done it,
mm-hmm.
there is still hope for the tree.
Well, he may have damaged the bud spurs for one season,
okay.
although I tend to think he really wouldn't have. It would have caused a foliar loss. They may be, as a result of that, the plant was shocked somewhat and won't produce that many flowers this season. But I think you'll find by next year everything will have righted itself
okay.
And the plant will produce just as it normally has. A 15-year-old apple tree is not, by definition, an old tree.
Uh-huh.
Darlene, thanks so much for the phone call.
All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
And, David, we are out of time. Any
okay.
Last pearl of wisdom for our listening audience?
Really think about conserving your water. Really think about that in gardening. And in the future, I promise it will become a bigger issue. If ever there was a one, this will be a one. We'll be there right at the forefront of gardening. Really think about investing in ooze hoses, drip hoses. Believe me, they saved so much of that resource and are really going to save some money for you in terms of not using electricity to pump so much water.
David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company. David, you open right through Memorial Day weekend?
Oh, yes.
And that is on Highway 10 in Stevens Point.
It is.
David, thanks so much.
You're always welcome.
I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Scott Clark. Musical selections today from John McCutcheon, Eric Clapton, Louis Armstrong, and Ella Fitzgerald, and Arlo Guthrie. Next week, we focus on the do's and don'ts of electronic communication. For those of us who don't know the difference between a telephone and a tweet, that's next Thursday on Route 51. Route 51 can be heard every Thursday at 5 o'clock on the Ideas Network stations, WLBL 91.9 FM Wausau, 930 AM Auburndale Stevens Point, WHBM 90.3 FM Park Falls, and now on WHRM 90.9 High Definition Channel 3. Thanks again for riding, or should I say plowing, shoveling, and raking with us today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.
With a prayer and song.